Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Yesterday, safety DJ Swearinger led the Redskins with seven tackles, had the team's only sack and only quarterback hit, forced a fumble, and was impactful from start to finish. He also leads the team right now in appearances on the Grant and Danny radio show. He's with us each and every Monday at 11 a.m., win or loss. DJ, first of all, congratulations on a strong showing and on bouncing back with a win. I want to start, though, asking you about the unsportsmanlike penalty at the end of the game. Cam Newton was doing a lot of chirping. You were chirping back, and they flagged 36. What happened?
Yeah, man, it was a bad call. We was chirping the whole game, and at the end of the game, I just told him I had the last laugh. I could talk. I basically got the last laugh because we got the W, and he got mad at that. Kept coming back at me. And I was just talking regular trash, and he his words were fighting words. So but they end up flagging me for it. But it kind of sucks. But I definitely better not get fined for it because he came at me. I can talk trash. Nothing wrong with us talking trash as men, but the flag, it definitely shouldn't have been a flag.
DJ, we talked Tuesday from New Orleans after that game. You guys were obviously not thrilled with how that went. That was tough.
Right.
How did you bounce back and play as well as you guys did this past Sunday from that?
Well, we just as a collective group, we knew we had to go back to the drawing board, reevaluate things, understand that we can't put that out there on film, especially on a Monday night, especially on national television. We can't put any type of performance of that caliber out there again. And in order for us to not do that, we got to go out and practice every week with an intensity, with enthusiasm, with a purpose, with details and focus. And we do that every day. We can have performances like we had yesterday on a consistent basis.
DJ Swearinger on Grant and Danny. Fans, I think, always love hearing when leaders step up and call meetings. Can you tell us a little bit about whatever Josh Norman, how he called the meeting on Tuesday that we've heard about and what was said, whether you spoke as well? And basically, if you don't mind, just how that came about. Does he send a group text and say, hey, meet in this room or come to my house? How does that go down?
He just called it up just in the DB meeting room, and, he talked to the DBs, us, and the coaches, just making sure we get everything right, chemistry-wise. He wanted us to understand that, he's all in for the long run. He'll be doing the extra things that, we all need to be doing to move forward, to be successful. And it was very helpful for us as a group, and we practiced with a purpose. Later on in the week, McPhee, we got together as an entire defense with McPhee, and that helped the entire defense out. So if we continue to do those things with the DBs and the entire defense, to build the chemistry off the field is only going to help us on the field.
Let me jump in real quick, Danny.
Go ahead, please.
You mentioned Pernell McPhee.
Yes.
He isn't a guy we know a whole lot about. He doesn't play a ton.
Right.
I mean, that's not normally the type of guy you'd think leading a defensive meeting, but did he do a lot of talking this week too?
Yeah, it really off the field stuff, it really doesn't matter who does it. As long as we get the chemistry going, as long as everybody's on the same page and we got that brotherly love going, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter who you are, as long as everybody's on the same page, man, it's gonna help us.
DJ, that's the number one rushing team in the NFL coming into this week. And you guys held Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey, their two best running weapons, to 63 yards total.
Cool.
What was the plan? How did you do that?
Well, we had a good plan coming in. You know, I loved the plan coming in. I knew we was they was number one. We took that as a challenge. You know, coach wanted me to play down in the box, just, you know, so I could play down in the run and play 88 a lot. We knew that was the challenge, and we accepted the challenge, and we did well, man. And, you know, that was some of the trash talk to Cam about, you know, just letting him know that he wouldn't be running today. You know, it's, you know, he runs a lot, you know, but I just knew I wanted to let him know that he wasn't going to run a lot on us.
DJ, and saw that you walked into FedEx Field wearing a Sean Taylor jersey yesterday. Mm-hmm. Wanted to honor the late, great safety who played here in Washington. Mm-hmm. You obviously grew up a big fan of his, but on days where you're strolling into the stadium rocking his jersey, I mean, you get a little bit more motivation maybe to go out there and throw your weight around?
Right. Anytime you put that jersey on, you got to bring it. I wore it last year against when we played the Raiders. And we got the big hit on Marshawn. So anytime you put that 21 on or the 36 on, man, you got to bring it. It brings back memories when he played. It was definitely a legendary moment yesterday. And he should be proud.
TJ, that final drive. Now, second half, Carolina, they could run on you guys, but they were throwing a little bit, right? Yep, they're moving the ball. A couple guys, Torrey Smith had a couple catches. Funches was impressive. I didn't know he had that in his tank. That was pretty impressive the way he was catching the ball with his hands, et cetera. Strong guy. But they're moving the ball a little bit, second half, and then that final drive. Take us into the conversations, into the huddle. What's going on there as you guys end up with that great fourth down stand?
Yeah, man, we was just telling each other, man, from the start, man, we need four hard plays, man. We just need four hard plays. however they came, whether it was the front, whether it was the linebackers, the back end, we just knew the back end was going to have to, you know, eventually we was going to have to man up. And that's something we confident in. We confident in our man-to-man abilities. I think when we do play man-to-man, teams are, you know, it's hard to, you know, beat us that way because we can let our pass rush. Those guys can do things up there, and we can just lock up in the back end, man. And that's just your backyard football when you just say, man up, I got this, man, everybody win you one-on-one. You know, that gives the DBs confidence. It gives the whole defense confidence, even the whole team to when, you know, the offense looking out there, oh, them boys are man-to-man. They really just locking up. And, that gives everybody a lot of confidence, man, and that's what we did, and we had to do it, and it was a great start by us.
DJ, I really liked a couple of the calls from Greg Minuski as well. On second and fourth down, he sent some blitzes. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was important, particularly on fourth down, because McCaffrey's so good out of the backfield, but he sent two linebackers up the A-gap, and basically McCaffrey had to stay in to pass protect, and now he's not able to shake someone in the flat. What did you think of Minuski's calls? And it seemed like he was a little more aggressive at the end of the game.
Yes, we like that a lot. I always liked the aggressive defense coordinator, that, you know, man, let's go get that quarterback, let's man up in the back and let our DBs earn our money and earn our shine, man, because when you play man-to-man, you know, that's when you, I mean, people look at you different when you play man-to-man as far as playing zone. So we love when Minuski dials those blitz up, man, and let us play ball.
DJ Swearinger with us live here at Redskins Park on Grant and Danny. DJ, we started the show talking about how good Josh Norman was forcing those turnovers, how well I thought you played flying around, especially down in the box, a couple hits on Cam Newton, including the sack. Who played better than we're talking about? Like, who deserves some shine that maybe was under the radar in this ballgame for you guys?
Well, I looked at the film, man. I always see 95, man, and 93 flying to the ball. 95, I seen him on a couple. Well, actually, the screens that he did, that they ran, he made both the tackles. And that's the 90, that's a 315-pounder. That's
moving,
you
like
know,
that,
he's making plays on the sideline. You seen him last week against Mark Ingram. He forced a fumble last week against Mark Ingram on a screen play. So it's crazy. You see a big 95 every time they run a screen, he's always the one that's making the play. So, you know, all those plays right there get overlooked. But as a safety, you know, I see it all.
Payne and Allen, five combined tackles. DJ Swearinger talking about the big boys up front. Josh Norman had a tough week. He got benched for a drive in New Orleans. He was answering questions about how much he cares about football. And then this is how football works. You got to love sports. Right. He has the interception for the first time in 19 games. He forces a fumble for the first time in 17 games. Mm-hmm. It was a good day to be Josh Norman, huh, DJ?
Right, it was, man. And that's something he needed. He needed that, especially what happened last week. And, you know, like you said, you know, the drop for 19 to 17, you know, that, as a DB, you know, that can mess with your head, you know, that can stir your confidence up a little bit. But you know, that was big for him. He needed that. We needed to see that as fellow DBs. You know, that's something that was good for us to see. It was good for the entire group, and I think we can build on that, man. And it can give us our entire team a lot of confidence moving forward, man. I think it'll definitely help us.
It's Dallas week. It snuck up on you quick, but here it is, man. Right?
Hey, it's time.
So is it basically as simple as you got to stop Zeke Elliott or slow him down as much as you can? Because nobody really stops him, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the key to the whole thing?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the key. You got to stop Zeke, man. You got to, we got to find ways to, we got to load the box, play man. That's, you know, that's what I like to do anyway, man. Let's play him. We ready for it. We just played the number one rushing team in the league, and we think we taking this as another challenge. So we'll definitely be ready, man. We 0-4 the last 2 years, so it's time to get a win.
And not only that, DJ, but you told us this a week ago, so just taking the words out of your mouth, you guys got to find a way now. You play these great games. It's win-loss, win-loss, win. Yeah. You got to find a way to string a few together. That's what the good teams do. You get your first chance again to try to change the way this season's gone this weekend. Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's, you know, I said it yesterday, you know, it shouldn't be any joking around or laughing this week. We need to be all business this week. We have a perfect opportunity, man, to go first place and to be 1-0 in our division. You know, we went 1-5 last year, which is horrible, man. We're the laughing stock of the East, and we don't want to be that laughing stock. We want to be the dominant team in the NFC East this year, and we got the perfect opportunity to start off fast.
How do you build on what you did this week to that end, right? Putting together multiple great weeks in a row. It's easy to dig deep and not right. easy, but you know what I mean? You dig deep and you rally one time.
Right.
How do you sustain that?
We got to keep the energy high. I think it's more of an energy thing. When guys come in, you know, they feel good about themselves. We shouldn't feel good about being a team that we should beat. You know what I'm saying? If we should be the team, you know, you come in the next week and you just get ready for the next week. You know, you don't think about Carolina. You don't really even should talk about some of those plays. You should be moving on and asking each other about, did you see such and such on Cowboys film? You know, that should be the conversation when we're talking week. And if we do that and everybody's on the same page, Cowboys-wise, man, we go put together another dominant performance.
The always honest DJ Swearinger here on Grant and Danny. Great having you on the show as always. Congrats on a huge individual performance and a big win yesterday.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. There's DJ Swearinger right here on the Fan. Clinton Portis is going to join us in about 15 minutes at the bottom of the hour. Let's look back on that defensive stand that won the Redskins the game late in the fourth quarter. First and 10 from the Washington 21 for Newton and the Carolina offense with 57 seconds to go, and they were kept out of the end zone. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you making the show part of your day. I'm in Boston. Danny is at Redskins Park in Ashburn. Clinton Portis will be joining us in a little over 10 minutes on site at the facility. So, Danny, here in Boston yesterday, I found a sports bar right next to Fenway Park called Game On. I had to walk into the D gate, and I was on the field for pregame from 4 o'clock to about 7 o'clock, right before the first pitch of the ALCS game, too. So I was super worried about the fact that I was going to miss the end of the Redskins game. But I went and I posted up about an hour early, put my daily fantasy lineups in, sat at this bar, ate some good food, watched the game until there was about 7 or so minutes left. So then I'm watching on the phone for a little bit as I walk down the street, and I go into D-Gate. The only ballpark in the country, I think. It worked out beautifully. There are TVs, for whatever reason, at Fenway Park, like down the first and third baselines, in the wall if you're in the front row, essentially, leaning over the railing. So I sat there and watched the end of the game, and the fourth down play happened at 59 minutes after 3.
Oh, perfect.
And then I went on for the start of the game at 4 o'clock. So I got to watch everything, but I was literally sitting in the first base coach's box, basically, on the field for my pregame show at Fenway, leaning over the railing, watching the stand the Redskins made in the red zone against the Panthers.
One of those unique, this is how I watched that play type stories.
That's right, I'll remember that one for a while.
Yeah, I'm just the ALCS, no big deal, at hanging over a railing in the first base coach's box. So that fourth down play, that's the one that's going to get, you know, be remembered. But that drive, Carolina was marching. And I'll tick in the mind of a pessimistic Redskins fan. That felt like a Carolina win. It felt like the fact that the Redskins couldn't score a touchdown, couldn't punch it in, had so many chances at the end of the first half, start of the third quarter, to add points, whether they be field goals, touchdowns, whatever. But, you know, they got rid of the football twice quickly, got the ball within 5 minutes left in the first half, inside Carolina territory twice at the 40-something and then the 33 to end the half, and ended up not being able to convert there. It felt like one of those squandered opportunity-type games, and Carolina was going to be led back, and Cam Newton was dealing in the second half of that game. The drive starts at the Carolina 16, and it's 15 yards to McCaffrey. It's 18 yards to Olsen. It's that sideline pass to Olsen where he didn't get his second foot down in bounds, but 15 to Moore, and it was just, it looked like it was over to me. And I think a lot of Redskins fans probably felt that way, that touchdown was coming. Then all of a sudden, that first and 10, GP, at the Washington 33, the no gain stop of Christian McCaffrey finally slowed the momentum. Then you had some of the incompletions. Then you had some of those zero plays, and ends up in that fourth down stand. A great sequence for the Redskins defense when they finally were able to stiffen up a little bit, and that was awesome.
Well, it's also easier to move the ball down the field at the end of games as teams are giving you a little softer coverages and not giving anything up vertically. And then as you get toward the end zone, it is going to get tighter. Yeah. The throws get refined. You're not just hitting checkdowns underneath to wide open options. You got to have some precision and some accuracy, and Cam Newton in the final few plays didn't. But yeah, let's go through that stand, because you're right. They had marched 63 yards on the first 8 plays of the drive without breaking a sweat. Cam Newton was 6 of 7 for 60. He had also scrambled, or I should say, snuck the ball forward 3 yards on a quarterback sneak for a first down to move the chains on that 3rd and 1. So they were 1st and 10 from the 21. And he picks up 5 on a little check down to McCaffrey, which was the right decision. He was open. He got 5, kept the chains moving. Great open field tackle. He was brought to the ground immediately by Josh Harvey Clemens and Mason Foster, and primarily Foster there. So you give those guys a lot of credit because they closed the gap as the ball was coming. And it was 2nd and 5 from the 16. Still 47 seconds to go. Newton then throws the incomplete deep pass to McCaffrey. That should have been a touchdown.
Now, he had him right there.
Yes,
you're right.
He did.
It should have been a touchdown. Not an easy throw by any stretch.
Well, no, but it wasn't that difficult to throw. Here's why it was difficult, I should say. Because of Minuski's blitz. If that's an unimpeded throw where he's just standing flat-footed pregame and he's dropping a ball in a bucket into McCaffrey in the middle of the end zone, it's a touchdown. But that blitz from Minuski saves the day. Foster loops around the left edge. Kerrigan crashes from down as a defensive end in toward the center. Foster, using the space created by Kerrigan by design there, comes around the edge, and there was a pocket pushing by Preston Smith, who forced Newton kind of away from him and toward Foster. He ends up having to lob the ball a little bit early, and he throws it too far. But on that play, on that 2nd and 5 from the 16, McCaffrey had beaten Monte Nicholson. So then 3rd and 5 from the 16, Newton sees before the snap. It's Devin Funchess, Quentin Dunbar in the slot. Same matchup as that 23-yard touchdown, remember, earlier in the game? Where Funchess leaped over top of Dunbar and makes the grab over top of his helmet. You mentioned how strong his hands were. I was really impressed by that as well.
Really impressive.
So he says pre-snap, I'm going there. He actually has Greg Olsen come free middle of the field for a first down working on DJ Swearinger. He decides before the snap, he's throwing it to Funchess. Quentin Dunbar had phenomenal coverage. Inside leverage, wasn't letting anything in breaking. So he took away basically that slant and go that they scored on him earlier in the game with. And so Newton's got to make a perfect throw, or a back shoulder kind of ball that if Funchess falls down coming back to him to catch. He throws a line drive out of the back of the end zone. And on 4th and 5 from the 16, Kerrigan pushes the pocket. And I thought on that play, Danny, I don't know what you saw. I thought Newton had to basically throw from a much higher arm slot. And that's why the ball sailed, because of Kerrigan's pressure.
Yeah, he couldn't step into the throw. And when he couldn't, you saw a couple things happen. One, an interception earlier on in the game, the Josh Norman. And then you saw that high throw from there. That's what pressure is. It's not always sacks. It's disruption of rhythm, timing, and comfort for a quarterback. The Redskins have lacked that interior pressure for so many years. Now with these kids, as DJ Swearinger pointed out, with Allen, Ioannidis at times, he's gotten home. And Daron Payne, you're able to sometimes force quarterbacks not to be able to step into throws adequately. You get the sales.
800-636-1067 is the number if you want to hop in on that defensive stand for the Redskins. It was a rough second half for much of the third and the fourth quarter. They didn't have answers, but they came up with them when they needed to. We're also expected to be joined by Clinton Portis on this Victory Monday, live from Redskins Park, where Danny's broadcasting today. He's out in Ashburn. You're locked into the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Danny, 106.7 The Fan. It's a Victory Monday. I'm in Boston. Danny has the quality assignment. He's in Ashburn hanging out with the victorious first place Redskins. And he's found Clinton Portis, who's with us each and every Monday after games in this slot at 11:30. CP, we've been saying this for a little while, but the trend continued. Maybe nobody does a worse job responding to wins than the Redskins, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a team that does a better job after bad losses at bouncing back than this team, huh?
Yeah, they do. They do a great job at bouncing back after a loss. But you got to figure out a way to get some continuity. You got to figure out a way to sustain the success. You know, it's hard for listening to the temperature after the Saints game and coming doing radio last night after a victory and everyone already expecting you like, well, we're going to lose because we just came off of a big win. So you got to change the narrative. You got to change the mindset of your fan base.
How impressive were they running the ball yesterday? I didn't think they'd really be able to honest with you, against Carolina. Getting Thomas Davis back and with Kuechly and Kawan Short, those guys up front, I thought they would scuffle to run the ball. Peterson was great, but I thought it was some smart design and some pretty good calls by this offense to be able to establish that run. And I think that's the best thing the offense did yesterday.
Well, in the first half, I agree. You know, I think coming out, establishing the running game, being able to take shots, getting the turnovers that put you in position, you were never really behind on the chain. So you were able to stay on pace. All of a sudden in the second half, when you get behind on the chains, now you can't scheme up a run play and it's obvious passing downs and passing situations because you're getting penalties. So the game plan changed. But in the first half, I thought AP ran hard. If you go ask AP, I'm sure after watching this film, he's going to say he left a lot of yardage on the field. I was watching film with Cooley this morning, and I just seen some runs that probably, you know, a comfortable AP from 4 or 5 years ago, there's no way he's stopping his feet. There's no way he's checking in the hole. This is, you got two people coming at him, and he's determined to split them, so he's going to run full speed through them. You know, I really honestly think, and this is small critiquing, that he should take another step back, because if you watch AP run, he goes full speed from start to the line of scrimmage, and then he comes to a complete stop to restart, which is great for fans. You're like, wow, he came to a complete stop, or look at his jump cut. It's exciting. But if he take another step back and get to, you know, just buy some room,
then he doesn't have to stop his feet.
He doesn't have to stop his feet, so he can take that forward momentum, and every play would be a positive play because he's not checking his feet in the backfield. So if you could take a step or two back, now when he comes downhill, it's going to be perfect timing for him to continuously keep that build up and run through people.
Enlightening perspective from one of the great running backs in Redskins history, Clinton Portis, here on Grant and Danny. One thing I loved about you, and Peterson provides this as well, I get jacked up when a team, and more importantly a back, can churn out yards when the defense knows it's coming. Like, you're trying to salt the game away, you got to put a team away. Peterson had 29 fourth quarter yards, many of them hard earned, and set up a couple of those field goals in the fourth quarter that ended up proving to be the margin, the difference in the game. Give me an idea of how much more difficult it is, what problems are presented at the end of a game, CP, when you're rushing and the defense knows you're coming downhill because of the clock.
Well, I mean, when you have that, if as you seen, when they loaded the box, I think AP came up with the big run while the box was loaded. That's a good thing about the defense, knowing when they bring that safety down, you don't have that extra support. So if you break that initial line of scrimmage, there's no one else that can stop you, or they're going to be chasing you. So, you know, it's kind of a lick your chops, because if you're in the right play and everyone gets on a man, you know, of course you're going to have someone to beat. But if everyone gets to their block and you have the right play call, then it's you one-on-one against someone. And if you make that guy miss, that's your huge play.
Clinton, I thought the most important thing this offense did, again, it's not like they scored 50 points or did something incredible. They got outgained by Carolina, but they were effective, especially early. I thought the most important thing was 9 targets for Jordan Reed, even though the numbers don't blow you away. 5 catches, you know, 30-some yards, 36, for whatever it was, but some first down catches, moving the chains, getting some early down success. I thought getting Reed involved early and often was the most important thing that they did.
I think that was good for a lot of the players, you know, even Doxson. You know, yeah. You look at Doxson, being able to target Doxson, it wasn't a lot of yards, but getting him small, you know, small catches, a 5-yard gain, because his mindset is he's involved in the game. Now he's blocking. You know, you don't look at the contributions that he made on the edge and blocking. Even Jordan Reed, forcing him the ball, because a couple times it was good coverage by Thomas Davis and you still attempted to go to him. But hey, that's forcing your best player the ball. I don't have anywhere else to go with it, so I'm coming to you. And when you look at the catch that Jordan Reed made, the one-handed palm, that's when you get in rhythm. If that was his first target, you can't make that catch. But because you're involved in the game plan and you're zoned in, you can make a one-handed grab. So I think getting a lot of the guys, even getting Alex Smith, short passes, quick passes early on to get him some rhythm. If you watch how he worked the pocket in the first half, he was doing a great job. Second half, all of a sudden when they got more pressure and began to get to him, it seemed like he was getting uncomfortable in the pocket and getting hit. But in the first half, you look at Alex Smith comfort level when he's stepping up and working the pocket. It's not a lot of extra and rolling around and breakdown. It was, you know what, I step back, let me step up into this and release the throw. So it's totally different.
Clinton Portis, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. I don't ever remember you having a week where you had as many tough questions asked about your passion or what was going on with you or why you were struggling or a time when you got benched. So maybe you can't relate to what Josh Norman went through this week, but man, the walls were caving in on him, and he breaks the 19-game drought without an interception. He punches out a fumble, 3-play sequence. He had 2 takeaways. Quite a response, CP.
Well, I think that was a great response by Josh, and that's what it takes. It takes him to be challenged. Sometimes you got to be knocked off that high horse and get challenged to respond, because you could get to a comfort level in your own head like, well, I'm not the problem, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and then all of a sudden someone challenges you to do more. And if you respond, I'll challenge Josh right now if he's going to respond with 2 turnovers. Hell, I mean, I think he should be challenged every week, and that's the difference. Like, the comfort level of players around here, you should be challenged. You should always have someone breathing down your neck. You know, for me, I always had someone in the running backs room that was waiting on me to slip up. So I had to stay on my P's and Q's. When you look at Ladell Betts or Sean Alexander or Larry Johnson and the guys that I played with, you go back to Denver or you go to the University of Miami, I've always been in rooms with capable backs or guys that were waiting on their moment. It's just the fact sometimes you need that reality check. You know, for me, I think it happened against the Giants 1 year where we're on the goal line and they took me out and we didn't score and we ended up losing the game. And I'm thinking, like, why I'm on the sideline? It was kind of an internal beef that got cleared up, but it happens.
What are you seeing from this offensive line? You mentioned the first half. It looked really comfortable, right? The protection was good. Smith stepping up and you know, dotting the I, hitting his receivers. Second half, they've struggled all season long. 1 garbage time touchdown against New Orleans. They haven't put the ball in the end zone in the second half. Looks like there's more pressure on Smith. It looks like it's just not as comfortable in operation. What are you seeing from the O-line specifically, especially in the second half of games?
Well, it's like if you're out hunting, like if you're out target shooting and your target is in the same place, once you get started, you might can't hit that target. But the moment you figure out how to hit the target, and this target is going to be in the same place. Now, the moment you figure that out and you hit the target, then you hit the target numerous times. So that's like comparing first half to second half, mm-hmm. because we're not moving the target, and the target is Alex Smith. His aiming point is the same. You're not moving the pocket. You're not getting him outside of the tackle box. This is his aiming point. So if I'm a defender, I'm knowing he's going to be 5 to 7 to 9 steps away from the line of scrimmage, and that's where I need to make my mark. He's not outside of the tackle box. They're not doing rollout passes or play action passes. So in the first half, you're kind of cautious of just beelining because they could come out and hit you with trickeration or hit you with something that you're not expecting. But in the second half, once you come to the realization, oh, well, this is what they're doing. He's going to stay right here. Now I have a different mindset. And especially if they get behind on the chains, like our play action game doesn't really match our running game. So if you get behind on the chains or your running game isn't effective, then why am I going for a RPO, or why am I thinking you're doing play action?
You don't respect it.
Yeah, it just takes you to the mindset of realizing, well, this team play action isn't that good, or this team is not running the ball to come out. This team doesn't change. So in a defender's mind, I could start jumping stuff. It's just like for a running back. When a running back continuously see the same look, you might stop me a couple times. But if we stick with this play, then eventually I'm going to set you up to get what I want out of this because I've seen this look numerous times. Whereas I think when you look at AP, it's always a different look. So it's kind of he takes off fast to the line, zooming in. Like you go back to last week where he missed the inside cut and jumped outside. And it was a clear touchdown if he stay inside of his guard block. You come back to this week, he gets inside of that guard block. So it's a matter of seeing the play. You know, you look at the trap, the quick hitters that he had a lot of success on in this game. Once you're familiar with something and you can do it full speed where you're not thinking, where you're not checking your feet, where you don't have to slow down and you know where everyone is going to be, it's totally different.
Clinton Portis participated in 14 Dallas weeks. We'll get his perspective on the Cowboys matchup and what it's like at Redskins Park while getting ready for the Cowboys next right here on Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, and this is The Fan. When Danny walked into Redskins Park today, there was a sign pinned on the glass that greets the folks coming into the building that says Dallas Week. Clinton Portis is our guest each and every Monday after games, and he's with us right now on The Fan. Clinton, 7 seasons in Washington, met 14 times you were in this organization as they got ready for the Cowboys. I've always kind of said that players don't care as much about this rivalry as fans do. I mean, there's so much player movement. Guys like Stephen Bowen or Jason Hatcher played for both organizations, would go to dinner with guys on the other team. You tell me, though, did you guys have any needle movement? Did you feel any differently for the Cowboys knowing that the fans were going to be more into the week?
Well, I think it's for fans. I think when you look at this rivalry as a fan sitting on this side, it's totally different because as a player, you know, you're playing them twice and you want to just split, you know. You want to make sure you at least split and not go down 0-2. That's when it gets tough. But for me, the biggest rivalry was the Eagles. I loved playing the Eagles. I knew it was going to be a tough, nasty, physical game. I knew I was going to get called on a lot because we weren't going to have a lot of time to throw the ball. When we played the Cowboys, it was kind of, hey, I knew by the game plan how this was going to go. Mm. If we came out throwing the ball, we lost. If we came out running the ball, we won. And it was obvious. If you go back and you look at those games, you look at the record, if we established a run, if we attempted to run the ball and ran it, then we won those games. If we came out throwing the ball, we lost those games because at that time, DeMarcus Ware and Spears and those guys were getting to the quarterback at an alarming rate.
An absurd rate, right? Yeah.
So I used to be like, when did we get Tom Brady or Drew Brees to turn into a passing team? And if we came out and we ran the ball, we won.
What do you see in this Redskins-Dallas matchup? And basically, how do you guess or evaluate which Redskins team is going to post, right? We've seen two completely different groups in the same uniform, right?
That's what makes it hard because if we're still on schedule on this roller coaster ride, that means we're about to come down.
Yeah.
Because we just went up, and now you're getting ready to have that drop that kind of takes your stomach and turn it like, what the hell is going on? And then you look at it, well, this is a divisional game, and you have an opportunity to secure first place in the NFC East. I'm sure the coach is not taking as much pressure as last week, and everyone's not calling in to get him fired, but at some point, he has to say, you know what, I'm sick of this. And I got to get my team ready. I got to have a game plan that's going to be exciting enough. If you look at the early game plan, taking the shot, finding Vernon Davis, coming out in attack mode, being aggressive, changing things up, you know, not having Jameson Crowder, not having CT, all of a sudden you got to rely on Quick. And you got what's the other kid? Michael Floyd on the field.
Yeah.
And now you got Mo Harris on the field. So other team is looking like, who are these guys and why are they out here? But they did a great job blocking. They did a great job finding Doxson and mixing it up with Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis. So you have another opportunity like that. I actually love the big package, not having Crowder available. Now when you stick Jordan Reed in the slot, those receptions can go to him. You can move Jordan Reed, put him outside, move Vernon Davis, put Sprinkle on the field. They came out in three tight ends. You got an opportunity to put Doxson and Mo Harris. That's a big lineup. Now you can run and throw the ball in that lineup. So I think you got a lot to play with. I'm not really down and out about not having CT and Crowder because Bibbs, I think, filled in good. And the other guys made up, you know, Vernon Davis and Doxson and Mo Harris made up for not having Crowder. So if you can sprinkle those guys in and get them involved, I look defensively. And you got to get some kind of pass rush from Kerrigan and Preston Smith. It's 6 weeks. This is game six.
Yeah.
And you have one sack from your linebackers. You got to get more. You can't put all the pressure on Ioannidis, Payne, and Allen. Although they're playing great, you're going to burn them out for the second half of the season. I know they're young guys, but you're asking them to rush the quarterback, stop the run, and be Superman. You can't. You got to get help. You got to get some pressure on the quarterback from your outside guys. So that's going to be major in this game, because if you get pressure, you look at Dunnie and J-No and DJ and those guys in the back end, they're playing decent. You know, this defense has been bend, don't break. I think they're playing pretty good overall defensively. But if you could create more turnovers, as you did this week, you need to create turnovers. You need to get hits on the quarterback, and you need to stop Ezekiel Elliott. So it's another tall task. It doesn't get any easier looking at this team schedule, but I think it's something that you can do. This is a winnable game. This is a game at home where you have the opportunity to really come out and sample your season, because you blew it when you had opportunity against the Saints. Now you get a makeup date.
Your radio home for Clinton Portis all season long. Grant and Danny, 11:30 to noon. You can hear why we love having him on the show. Clinton, enjoy Monday Night Football. We appreciate the time, buddy. We'll do it again next week, hopefully for the first time all season after a second straight win.
We'll see.
Winning streak, right?
We'll see.
That's allowed?
I'm like the fans. I'm not going to get too excited. I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon. I'll be looking at the game and hoping we do get the second win.
Two straight wins is allowed, Danny. It has happened before. Our Beltway Blitz next at noon, 12:18. We'll take a peek back at the offensive performance. Redskins came out hot and cooled off as they have for much of this season. You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.